Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro 4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for eight, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at nissanusa.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Hotel Mars episode N with my colleague and co-host and co-pilot David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show. And we're greatly privileged to welcome Professor Avi Loeb of Harvard University to take us on a voyage in time and space. The IM-1 spheroids from the Pacific Ocean, extrasolar composition. That sentence needs unpacking, so I welcome the professor. Avi, it's a pleasure to speak to you. You've got a new book, Interstellar, The Search for Extraterrestrial Life and our Future in the Stars. But we begin with, not in the stars, but in the ocean, off of Papua New Guinea. This is 2023, an interstellar voyage to the bottom of the sea. You were in pursuit of the remains of a interstellar asteroid that broke up in 2014, according to tracking methods that were made available to you. And from there, you reasoned with your colleagues that there would be remnants of that interstellar asteroid traveler at the bottom, and so you went out on a catamaran with a large crew of happy volunteers from the photograph, and you sought to recover some of the bolide that broke up, I think you said, 17 kilometers above the Earth. This is a detective story, so I'll begin with that question. Why did you think anything would remain, Avi? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. Well, the story actually starts on January 8th, 2014, when the U.S. government satellites detected a fireball from an object roughly half a meter in size. And I call it an object because, as you will see in a few minutes, this did not appear similar to the space rocks that we had seen over the past decade from the solar system. This object was moving very fast. Faster than the escape speed from the sun, so it must have arrived from outside the solar system. But even outside the solar system, it was moving at 60 kilometers per second, a speed that is faster than that of 95% of all the stars in the vicinity of the sun relative to the local frame of the Milky Way galaxy. So that was unusual, but moreover, when the object exploded, it was actually subjected to extreme stress, much higher than any other space rock recorded by NASA over the past decade, 272 of them. It must have had a material strength larger than that of iron meteorites. And so that raised an interesting possibility that it's not an asteroid because it had material strength larger than all asteroids that were detected as meteors before, during the past decade, and by NASA. And so the possibility came into my mind that it may be a Voyager-like meteor. Just imagine our own spacecraft that we sent out of the solar system colliding with another planet like Earth far away. It would appear as a meteor of unusual material strength and speed. And that's what we decided to check by collecting materials from the explosion. And we did a calculation as to what we might expect. And we found that there should be some molten droplets from the surface of this object when it was exposed to the fireball that resulted from its friction on air. And we went there. The U.S. Department of Defense localized the fireball to within 7 miles, a region that is quite large. The ocean depth was larger than a mile. So we were looking for millimeter-sized particles across such a vast volume of water. And The bottom line is that we found them. We found the spherules. These are molten droplets from a meteor. And we found them concentrated along the meteor path. And those spherules that appeared near the meteor path had a composition that was never seen before, never reported in the scientific literature. It had an overabundance of elements like beryllium, lanthanum, uranium. That's why we call it BELAU, for beryllium, lanthanum, uranium. And these elements were more concentrated by factors of several hundreds up to 1,000 relative to solar system materials. And that was never seen before. It's not related to rocks that we see on Earth or to those that we find on the moon and or Mars or any other asteroid or object that was familiar to us within the solar system. So that was an independent confirmation based on composition that we found those spherules from IM-1, the first interstellar meteor, and indeed it came from an interstellar origin from outside the solar system. And this evidence is independent of the speed of the object, which by itself suggested an interstellar origin. And I should say that people doubted, some astronomers doubted the measurement of the speed. There was a paper that appeared as I came back saying that, in fact, the U.S. government measured it wrong. The speed must have been three times smaller. And this was a stony meteorite. Well, we found these spherules. We checked them and they were made mostly of iron. So definitely not a stone. And moreover, we verified that the composition is such that it came from outside the solar system. And what I would say to those astronomers is if the data doesn't agree with your model, you better revise your model rather than claim the data must be wrong.
David, you have a question for the professor.
Avi, could it possibly be that in interstellar space, the percentages and composition of these beryllium, lanthanum, and uranium might be normal, whereas here on Earth and in our solar system, they're not normal. And I wonder about beryllium, because that has nuclear overtones here on Earth. Would it be the same in interstellar space?
Yeah, so beryllium could be a flag of interstellar travel because it's produced by breaking heavier nuclei as a result of impact by cosmic rays. And when you have an object traveling through interstellar space, it's exposed to a higher flux of cosmic rays than rocks in the inner solar system, which are protected from galactic cosmic rays because the solar wind blocks them, most of them. Indeed, the beryllium could be the result of cosmic rays in interstellar space. But the elements between lanthanum and uranium, which are far more abundant, are interesting in another way. If you imagine a planet that has a magma ocean, basically molten lava filling it, it's called magma ocean planet. And in fact, the Earth started this way when it was bombarded by a lot of very heavy objects early on in its history. When you have something like that then with an iron core, then elements that have affinity, that are attracted chemically to iron, sink to the iron core and leave behind those elements that we found enhanced. So one possible origin is a magma ocean planet with an iron core, but it cannot be the Earth, the Moon, or Mars that used to be magma oceans, but they just don't match the abundance pattern that we have. But it could have arisen from a planet far away that had different conditions than we find on Earth or Mars. And that is the natural origin for such a composition. Of course, there is also the possibility that these elements were selected for a technological purpose by some civilization. In order to figure this out, you know, we need to go back and look for bigger pieces of the object, if any survive, and then it would be clear whether it was a rock or a technological gadget.
You list four four attributes of the spheroids that you found, I believe about 700 of them, four attributes that testify to the fact that it's interstellar. You've mentioned the high speed. You've mentioned the heavy element composition and iron isotope ratios. There's also that beryllium you're talking about is evidence of traveling in interstellar space cosmic rays. That looks convincing to me, Avi. What else would you need to identify this came from outside our solar system?
Well, we would like to check more isotopes in addition to iron and verify that indeed it looks like they have an abundance ratio that is quite different from solar system materials. It will just substantiate the claim even better. We want to look, we just examined 57 out of the 700 spherules, less than 10%. And for a reason, we put out the paper so that we get feedback from the community in case there is a good suggestion for how to make the analysis different than the way we followed. And so we have many more spherules to examine, and that could improve the statistics and as to which fraction of them are indeed of this unusual composition and what can we say about this meteor beyond what we already know. So I agree with you that currently the evidence is mounting, but it could get even better as we get more statistics on more spherules and we get to measure isotopes different than iron. For example, uranium, you know, has 235, 238. We would like to know the ratio and other elements, because in the solar system, all the materials were made from a gas cloud that collapsed to make the sun. And it was enriched by an exploding star nearby. And it has a very uniform initial composition. Now, of course, on Earth, as I mentioned before, during the magma ocean phase, some elements separated from others. So in the crust of the Earth, you do find enhancements that are not matching the abundance pattern that we see. But the isotope ratios did not change. Those are the thing, those are the markers of the material from another place. What I really want to know is where did this object come from? Right. If we had a way of dating the duration of the journey, it occurred to me during the expedition that we could actually pinpoint to the star or the collection of stars from where it came, because we know the velocity that this object had outside the solar system. And then from that velocity, multiplying it by the duration of the journey, we can get the distance. And so that's a unique opportunity to figure out where the source is. If we could only date the material, we could only assign an age to the material, which in principle is possible using radioactive isotopes that decay, that are unstable with some half-life. And there are many that are that have half-life above 10 million years or so, because the journey must have taken somewhere between 10 million years and 10 billion years. And there are a number of isotopes that can be used for such dating. We will try to do that. It's a challenging measurement, that will be worthwhile.
We're speaking to Professor Avi Loeb of Harvard University, the founder of the Galileo Project, about his discovery off of Papua New Guinea of spheroids linking to interstellar traveler. The new book is Interstellar, The Search for Extraterrestrial Life and Our Future in the Stars. This is Hotel Mars. And when we come back, the background of this is a interstellar traveler that was not apprehended. It passed through our solar system, Oumuamua. And what does that mean about exploration of our galaxy and our cosmos? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to The Wealth Break.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone. It's not just about saving. It's about investing. It's about navigating systems that weren't built for you, embracing your hustle, and relying on your community to create something bigger.
And that's exactly why we created The Wealth Break. We made something different, something more human. It's not just another financial podcast. It's a conversation about real life, real struggles, and real wins.
We're here to talk about the journey, You'll hear from people who've broken barriers, found creative ways to succeed, and learned to build wealth on their terms. Whether it's the first-time homeowner, a gig worker, or someone turning a side hustle into a six-figure business, we're bringing you their stories.
And we're not stopping at success stories. We're breaking down the realities, like what it means to take risk, how to navigate failure, and why resilience matters. Because wealth isn't about money. It's about creating a life where you can thrive and help others to do the same.
So if you're ready for a podcast as much as about people as it is about money, you're in the right place.
Listen to the Wealth Break podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Does Friendly have a taste? If it does, it's probably like Hello's peppermint-flavored anti-plaque and whitening toothpaste. Brush away plaque, show tartar who's boss, and remove surface stains to naturally whiten. Hello's thoughtful and flavor-forward products make brushing your teeth feel like a confetti-filled bathroom dance party. So say hello to Hello with the always cruelty-free, never tested on animals toothpaste that's made to spread smiles. Visit HelloProducts.com and let Hello add some everyday yay into your life.